Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. We climax it with this, the third one of three on a Saturday. It's a Standing Above the Crowd podcast, hosted by my good friend, a brother, a mentor, James Donaldson, live from Seattle, Washington. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this thing in Los Angeles, California. 347-205-9631. Goes by quick. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast. Platforms wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So it's more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, James, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? Third of all, you're bringing another legend through your great show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark. Thank you. Hey, I'm doing great. Beautiful day up here in the Pacific Northwest, and this is what we wait 9 months a year for the good weather to roll in. So it's here now. I'm doing just great. People can get a hold of me at jamesd@standingabovethecrowd.com. My personal email, so it comes directly to me. So if you have suggestions, questions, comments, good, bad, or indifferent, shoot them on over to me. I'll get right back to you on that. Today we have another great guest in the lineup of great guests we've had since we've been doing this show. And this is a fellow that I've known for several years here in the Seattle area. He is a sports writer, a journalist for the Seattle Times, which is our big main newspaper here in Seattle. And he's been there a good 20 years or so, at least, I would think. And So without any further ado, I want to introduce Percy Allen, who is our guest today. And we're going to talk a lot of Pacific Northwest sports. This is what we focus on today. We've got a huge listening audience from the Seattle area that would like to know about our various sports teams. And, of course, Percy writes a lot about basketball, NBA basketball. But before we get started, Percy, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. I believe you're from Cleveland way back today, and you've played a little bit of sports. So tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you, James. I am so delighted to be here. Obviously, I got the call from you, and as I said, you know, when you call, sure, anything you want. So, let's see. It was interesting to hear you say that, like, how long we've known each other. I was talking to my wife about that the other day, and it's like, you know, and we were talking about you, and she was like, is that the guy when we went out to a fundraiser for him? I was like, oh, yeah, that was back in the day. And they said, didn't he also have a health club right up the street from us? Like, it's just, like, amazing. Like, you're like, so I knew you, I was introduced to you, your post-playing career. And so it was just fascinating to just kind of, you know, to kind of see how people sort of grow and just kind of the things that they do. And so it has been really fun for me just to kind of watch you in your many endeavors. A bit about myself. Yeah. I came out to Seattle from the Midwest, from Cleveland, in the early 90s, heyday of Seattle. And as you know, this place was totally different back then, right? And it was just the tech boom, and, you know, Microsoft wasn't even an inkling of what it is now. You know, back then it was really mostly the Boeing was big, and the city didn't look anything like it does now, which is just sprawling and cranes everywhere and all of the building. And it has just grown immensely over these past, I've been here a little bit over 25 years, getting close to 30 years now, which is amazing.
Right.
I never thought I'd be here this long, but, I came out here after college, and, you know, you meet a girl, you have some kids, and, you know, house and all that stuff, and then next thing you know, 25 years has passed.
That's exactly right. And, of course, you and I, we bump into each other over at the gym every now and then. I know you still play a little basketball out there with the guys, and, you know, I'm trying to get my little workout in once in a while. So, we run across each other quite often. And so, you know, we want to talk a little bit about Seattle sports, but we do have a question from Dave from Chelmsford, Massachusetts. He's talking about the Warriors won 4 titles in 8 years, but no one cares. The league has changed, and these talents today aren't ready for the grind. Bring back the 80s and the 90s. What do you remember about those the glory days of the NBA, I call them, back in the 80s and 90s when I played, compared to today's game?
Oh, boy. Now, again, you know, for guys like us, it's really not fair, right? Because that's right in our wheelhouse. That's when I fell in love with the game. That's when I fell in love with kind of being a sports writer. And so, yeah. What do I remember? Oh, geez, just the competitiveness, right? A league that was still young, right? Like, you know, so I don't think we need to make any, aspersions here. Like, even still at that time, the NFL was king. Even baseball, you know, was a lot bigger than it was now. But back then, that was just kind of when David Stern had this vision of this league and just how are we going to market this league? How are we going to build this league? That was a lot of the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Boston Celtics, LA Lakers, and then other teams just kind of had to get in where they fit in, right? That like rise to the 80s, the popularity just exploded. Shoe companies came in, endorsement deals came in, Nike came on board, Coca-Cola came on board, and just the game grew, you know, at this massive, massive level. And then in the 90s, you know, then you see Magic and Larry just kind of pass that, but Michael Jordan. And then Jordan takes it to another level of just the commercialism. And then it becomes a global game. And you know, and then the Dream Team comes along. So that was just, you know, for me and my wheelhouse, it was just an incredible time for the NBA. You know, just characters, too. Like, I mean, you know, I don't even know why you're asking me, because you can speak to this far better than I can. Just the characters out there. I mean, guys were just personalities, right? Nicknames were born, yeah. Right? Just, I mean, it was just a really cool time for the league. But now this idea, can we go back? No, can never go back. I mean, I don't even think, you know, and truly, I don't even think I want to, because you just can't do the things that, I mean, oh man, Xavier McDaniel, could he even play today? You just can't do the things, you know, that you guys did in today's game.
Yes, yes. And I was just listening to a podcast yesterday about the evolution of Michael Jordan, how back in those days, I mean, the Pistons and the Celtics could just slam him to the floor as he was driving to the basket. You can't do that nowadays. No way. You'll be tossed out in a second. Also, the big guys, every team had a bona fide seven-footer that me as a big guy had to play against every single night. So there were no nights, you know, playing against Kareem one night, Artis Gilmore the next, Robert Parrish. I mean, all of them up and down the court, just great, great players. So the game has changed a lot. The big guys aren't featured like they used to be, and it's more of a small – you can play in today's game. It's more of a little guy's game. Work on your three-pointer, you get it, you're good.
Yeah. Well, and again, you know, is that advancement? Is that growth? I don't know. I think some people will say, look, there's more skill in the game now, right? That, you know, that like we want our big guys to do a lot of things. Like you have to be able to dribble. You have to be able to pass. You have to be able to initiate offense. And all of those things are great, right? That position in and of itself has totally changed. And now, if we can bring some of that back, I would like to see more. I mean, some of that come back into the game. And who knows? I think it will. Right? I mean, I would like to think that these things are cyclical. And I would like to think that maybe Xavier McDaniel couldn't play into today's game or at least be as effective as he was. But I would like to think that people like Kareem, Shaq, Wilt, those guys would be able to play today and dominate today.
Yeah. You would think so. You would think so. With the great talents they had back then, that is so great. Hey, we just came off a week where the NBA draft was held. Local Seattle products, there were three of them in the first round. Give us a little bit of background on those three players. And did you watch them in high school and in college as well?
I did, yeah. All three. And, just as you said, almost not atypical in a sense. Like, so this has happened for Seattle before. This is the third time that three Seattle area kids have gone in the first round. So, you know, so like not necessarily odd and strange, but again, very, you know, cyclical, doesn't happen every year. You know, first and foremost, we've got to start with Paolo Banchero. Look, he's been on everybody's sort of radar since he was 16 years old, right? You know, his mom played at the UW. She was, when she graduated, Rhonda Smith was the, don't quote me on this, the career rebound leader when she graduated. So, you know, obviously had talent. His dad played at the UW. He was a football player. And so just, you know, great family, great support system. You know, I kind of hate to put these sort of labels on kids, but he was kind of a can't-miss product from a very early age, right? Went to prestigious O'Day High School, all-boys school, all-private. You know, they are routinely in the mix for state titles. And so he's done well his entire prep career. Went to Duke. You know, some folks here will say, well, why didn't the Huskies get him? Well, look, when Mike Krzyzewski calls for his last year and really puts the full court press on you, you're not going to get that kid, right? And so even though he's a double legacy kid at UW, there's just, I mean, that draw to go to Duke, you're just not going to pass that up. And so went to Duke, was a standout as a freshman, led that team to the Final Four, Coach K's last year. You know, super talented team. Four of those kids, I want to say, went in the first round. So, you know, now I'm just going to add this. I was having some debates with some people deep the other night. And James, you can speak to this far better than I can. Cool. I know every kid wants to go number one, right? Every kid wants to, but I almost think it's a little bit too bad that he went number one, right? Because he goes number one to Orlando, and just the hype and the pressure that's going to be placed on him is just,
yeah.
I mean, he just doesn't need that smoke, right? It is just a whole lot that's going to come with it. And I've already seen it. You know, people in Orlando are talking about, you know, look, he's our first number one overall kid. You know, they're like comparing him to Shaq O'Neal and Penny Hardaway and Dwight Howard, thinking that, like, you know, that, like, he can lead them to the NBA Finals. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. You know,
yeah.
I mean.
That's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure.
Right?
And you and I were talking about just the other day about Kwame Brown, who was a high school pick, first pick in the draft 20 years ago. And even though he put together a 10-year career, he's still considered and has a label on him of a bust for some reason.
It's not fair. I mean, I don't know if it's fair or not, but it's kind of what we do, not the media, but just as sports consumers and fans, it's kind of what we do, right? It's there are expectations as to where you go, but somebody's got to go number one, and that person gets the expectations and get all of it. And so he's going to have to be, you know, now the face of this team, a very bad team, obviously, because they picked, you know, sort of, you know, they like had the first pick, but a very bad team, and so he's got to lead them. And so, anyhow, so he goes there. The next kid from Seattle, Tari Eason, went 17 to Houston. And Tari, a kid that went to Garfield High, you know, people from Seattle know that school, you know, incredible alums from, you know, Brandon Roy to, you know, just, you know, like you can go down to, you know, I mean, just so many talented in high school, college, and NBA players. He goes to Houston. And then last but not least, Marjon Beauchamp. And just a atypical prep career. He, you know, again, for old guys like us, it's like we, you know, I know we can kind of shake our head that. So he was one of those kids that, I mean, he went to four. So he started out at Hale, at Nathan Hale. Then he went to Garfield his sophomore year. Then he went to Rainier Beach his junior year. Then he went to a prep school his senior year. Then after that, he didn't go to college. He wanted to do a developmental academy, and that was at the height of COVID. And so then that got shut down. Then he went to Yakima Community College for a little bit that year. And then he went to the G League. And then he went to G League. And then Thursday night, he gets drafted. I want to say, what, number 26? I think he went 24. And he's going to the Milwaukee Bucks. So just an unconventional route to get to the NBA. But I tell you what, James, that's going to happen more and more, right? And for, you know, old-timers like us, it's just going to be like, you know, we can either shake our head and be like, oh, these kids nowadays, or, hey, look, this is just a new way of getting into the league.
Yeah, it's going to be a new way and a roundabout way for a lot of kids who don't want the college experience, and they really don't want the high school experience. They're going right through the and see what happens with there. It's a lot to put on our young people, but hopefully most of them can make it through and be successful with it. There's untold numbers that don't make it through, and those are the ones we never really hear about, and that's the tragedy of it all. So. Well, and then also Gonzaga had the number two pick, the big kid, Chet. Yes, yes. Chet, what do you think
going
about
to Oklahoma City? Yeah.
What do you think about this?
I'll say this. I'm hopeful, right? So I've had a chance to be around Chet a little bit when Gonzaga was in the NCAA tournament. I covered their games down in Portland, talked to Chet some there. You know, his background also, you know, just solid kid, solid family, solid sort of situation. You know, obviously what's the easy talking points are his frame, his body, 7 foot, very thin, 195 pounds, one want to say something like that, 7 foot and 195 pounds, just super skinny. But, you know, what we talked about earlier, 7-footer who is just skilled. James, I mean, this guy is just ball handling, shooting. He is, I mean, he could not have played in your era at all, right? Because you guys would have said, you know, you need to eat some pancakes, eat some steaks, get some, you know. In this day and age, he is the sort of prototypical big man, right? Offensively doesn't play in the post, but defensively is a heck of a shot blocker. Not necessarily an on-ball shot blocker, but a weak side shot. But, like, he gets sneaky blocks. Like, he'll come, like, if his guy is on the other side of the court and you think you got something going on in the post, he's got this just freakishly wingspan. I was about to say 7'2 or something, but he's got this freakishly long wingspan. And he'll come from the other side of the court and get your shot at the rim. And so, but you know, so look, I'm hopeful of him. I want to see it. I want to see if it works. He's going to a friendly place in Oklahoma City, a young team. Sam Presti, the general manager there, I know him. He's a very smart guy, and so he's going to have some time, right? Like, he'll get at least 2 or 3 years to, like, you know, sort of come into who he is. Whereas Paolo's going to have to produce immediately.
Right away. That's exactly right, yeah. Hey, let's switch up sports a little bit. I got a question from Hilda from Charleston, South Carolina, I believe. She's asking, what happened to the Mariners this year, and what's the outlook for Washington State, for the nationwide audience, Washington State University Cougars and the University of Washington Huskies? What's the outlook for them? But what's up with the Mariners?
Well, you know, expectations, right? And, you know, we sort of talked about that earlier, right? A team that finally was, you know, just looking like after last year, just last year, but how they finished the last month of the season, just on a roll, what they were, don't quote me, like a game out of making the playoffs and just thinking, all right, you know, they finally got their stuff together, finally got their act together, and here we go. And, yeah, it just really hasn't panned out yet. You know, what are they, like 33 and 39 or something like that? They beat the Angels last night. So, you know, and so that's a plus. But I don't think anybody thought that, you know, that they'd be just sitting on 33 wins at this part of the season. But here's the crazy thing about baseball, that just if that record was flipped, if they were 39 and 33, people feel a whole lot better, right? And that's just kind of how baseball is. You know, now, but the other thing that's going to help them is that I don't believe that anybody's really out of it, right? Like, I haven't really taken a look at the standings yet, but I'd be surprised if they were more than three or four games out of the last playoff spot. And so adding that extra playoff spot in baseball is going to keep fan bases like Seattle more engaged longer throughout the year. And no, that's really what we want, you know, sort of selfishly as a sports writer that's been in this market for so long. They're like, you know, they're like saying what the Mariners is, you just want them to be relevant until NFL training camp. Right, and then they can get out of the way and let the Seahawks do their thing. But so
and of course, every year we start out with so much hype about the Mariners, you know, because usually the Seahawks are done by now, and the Mariners take over. There's no NBA, so this is the talk of the town. The Mariners every single year, spring training, and how great they're going to be, and everybody's excited. But, you know, in baseball, you win 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 down the stretch, you're back in the running.
Yeah, right. And you know, I know this is going to sound sort of tired and for like baseball fans, but Atlanta last year, you know, I mean, look, they were out of it at this time. I mean, I don't know what their record was at the point in time last year, but they were out of it. And they came out of nowhere. And as you said, they got hot at the right time. And now they did something that the Mariners will hardly ever do and will probably never do, but they made trades. They picked up talent at the end of the season, and they won the whole thing. So I'm not going to say that Seattle is going to do what Atlanta did, but it gives you hope.
Yeah. Well, hey, we got about 7 minutes left. Let's talk on three different topics. On the Huskies and the Cougars and the transfer portal that's in place, how that's affecting things. I want to talk about the Seahawks without Russell Wilson and also the Sonics and the possibility of them coming back. So take those one at a time.
Okay. Are we talking Husky Cougars men's basketball or what are we talking here?
Football usually they're talking about.
Okay. So with Husky football, we've got a new coach, Ken DeBoer, and he comes in. And, you know, I'm not going to say that he inherited a mess, but, you know, obviously a team that was not winning. They fired Jimmy Lake, and they're starting over. And so I think the expectations are fairly low there, right? And so I just think they just want to get back to being, competitive. I think the, you know, in terms of Pac-12 football, all eyes are going to be on USC and their new coach. Lincoln Riley came over from Oklahoma, and, you know, he's expected to really carry the Pac-12 SEC. In terms of Washington State, you know, look, boy, I don't know. They're just also trying to be competitive. I don't think expectations are very high with them this year. And, look, I feel like I'm repeating myself here going with the Seahawks. Just when you trade a Russell Wilson, when you essentially let – Bobby Wagner go, all of the pieces from your last Super Bowl have now gone. In terms of players, the only holdover is Pete Carroll. This is a team that's obviously starting over. They've got to find the quarterback first. We don't know what that looks like right now. Could be Drew Locke. You still hear rumblings about bringing in Baker Mayfield from Cleveland. Could be Geno Smith, but they first and foremost got to find that quarterback piece. And because right now, I would say they've got the worst quarterback in their division. And as we know, in that league, it's all about the quarterback. If you don't have the quarterback in place, it's hard to win consistently. You can win some games, but it's hard to win consistently against other good teams. So they've got to figure that piece out.
And before we jump to the Sonics, take us back to the Huskies and the Cougars football. What do you think about the transfer portal and how that's affecting the game now?
It's a game changer. You know, for old guys like us, we just don't get it. But as somebody, what you said earlier, so I played college football way back in the day. The idea of transferring just never even, you know, really came to our mind unless your coach left. I mean, there had to be, like, really, you know, extreme reasons to, like, transfer. Nowadays, guys do it at the drop of a hat. So it is difficult. I will admit it's difficult for these coaches to build teams. You know, I get that, you know, because now, hey, look, you have transferred some of that power to these former player. I do like that aspect of it, right, that these coaches are able to leave anytime they want. And so now players are able to leave now anytime they want. And the punishments and the restrictions are far less and far less severe than they ever were. And so it's a new day and age. It is more difficult, though, for fans to really keep up because it feels like you're shuffling the deck every year. You don't know, you know, who's going to be the quarterback, who's going to be the point guard, who is our team this year, right? So there's not a lot of carryover from season to season.
Right, and that's what I'm noticing already just a year or two into this. My alma mater is Washington State University. I can't keep up with who's coming and going. You know, it's just like, wow, okay. Wow. Well, hey, we got about 3 minutes left. Let's talk Sonic basketball. What do you hear about the NBA possibly coming back to Seattle? I hear little rumors every now and then, then they go away, then they come back. What are your thoughts and what's your expectation?
Oh, boy. You know, yeah, kind of like you. They left 2008, and so, you know, look, it's been a long time, James. And so, you know, I've gone from hopeful to pessimistic to, you know, to just, you know, scratching my head, you know, and all of the rumors and stuff. I mean, that really doesn't matter. I do know this. There is a building in place now, and if you haven't been – to Climate Pledge Arena, it is gorgeous. It is immaculate. Yeah. It is a cathedral. 1 point something billion, you know, just really, really nice. So, and there's also, guess what? They have a locker room, too. I mean, there is a locker room there with the Sonics logo in front of it. So they just kind of went in like that regard. I know.
I didn't know that.
It's so cool to see. Yeah. I do believe that if the NBA expands from 30 to 32, Seattle and Las Vegas will be the markets. Now, it's just a matter of when. I don't know if it's going to happen in our lifetime. I did listen to Adam Silver in his latest press conference at the NBA Finals, and he was asked about this, and he said specifically, we are not looking to expand. I'm going to take him at his word for that. And so I do believe that they've got to do the media rights deal first. And so, you know, where are we at now? 2022. And so you're looking at about, you know, 2024, 2025. And so, you know, maybe something around then. And so maybe you might hear something the year before all of those things happen. But, it's going to happen. I cannot tell you when because, you know, I've been trying to predict this since 2008, and I can't believe that it's taken this long.
Yeah, me too. I hate, no disrespect, I hate to squeeze this in 30 seconds, but we got 30 seconds to talk about Sue Bird, Seattle Storm, and this is her last year, a surefire Hall of Famer. Give us 30 seconds on the Storm and Sue Bird.
She's a legend. She is absolutely one of the best people that I've ever covered. And just off the court as well, just a truly amazing person. She's not just great at her game, but she also cares about her community and just not the local community, but the global community. She is just a quintessential pro.
Yeah, exactly right. So, well, hey, Percy Allen, thank you so much for being our guest today. I'll follow up with a quick offline call with you after this. But everyone, this is James Donaldson, Standing Above the Crowd podcast, every single Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Join us, call in, and get the downloadable link that you can listen to it at any time. Signing off until next week. You all have a great week out there. Thanks again, Percy. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, Dan. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, now.